College Golf Talk is back. Burko and Brentley with you. We'll just call it a week sabbatical we took between the Masters and Augusta and everything in between. But we are front and center for the next 6 weeks, my friend. Heck of a couple weeks in Augusta. I mean, for Rory to complete the career Grand Slam in the manner in which he did. But our focus were on the women and the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Boy, that just gets better and better every year, doesn't it? The weather was great. We were on schedule. We weren't chasing tails to try to catch up, and it didn't disappoint. It was front and center on that Saturday.
Yeah, and it was probably too. I think I averaged the World Amateur Golf Rank, and came out to about 12 and change. But of the last six players on the tee sheet, and you had Lottie Wode, the defending champion, Kiara Ramiro, who obviously is a first team All-American from Oregon. There was just so much talent on that top of the leaderboard. I knew we were going to get something good, and that's what Carla Brunat did. If they did odds, may have had the highest
longest odds to win,
of at least those last three pairings. And you know, for her to kind of have her coming out party and show that, you know, hey, don't forget about me, I thought that was pretty cool. It wasn't quite Rory. I mean, I'll tell you what, that Sunday being at Augusta National and being in the thick of all that probably goes down as probably the best day of my career working in golf. And that's no slight to anything else that I've covered, but it was just, I mean, gosh, like it was just permanent goosebumps for, and so really like the next Tuesday, like it was just, it was something to be there. And, I'm pretty exhausted too. So, trying to get, geared back up for, you know, when it matters for us with regionals and the selection shows and all that. But yeah, I mean, two worthy champions, and my wife's glad that I'm home, but those 2 weeks were something.
Yeah, it was enjoyable to say the least. And then I went out to Pasa Tiempo for the Western Intercollegiate as we're doing this on Friday morning, just to sort of play the catch-up game. But we'll touch on that in just a little bit. Let's get right into the conference championship recap, starting with the women and the Big 12. You know, this is now where we're starting to see the true conference shakeup, if you will, when you've got Arizona beating Oklahoma State and Arizona State in a playoff to win the Big 12 title. I still have to wrap my head, you know, around these teams playing in different conferences, but those are probably the three that we thought would be right in the mix. And, you know, Arizona, you think about how they started the fall, winning the Folds of Honor Collegiate, and now you're sort of bookending it, heading into regionals with an impressive victory. For that to happen, I think all three of these teams could make some noise at some point somewhere. You know, Oklahoma State, you know, maybe this gives them a little boost. I think we know Arizona State, not a deep lineup, pretty much the same lineup. But Missy Farkay's team, you know, right there. And then you've got Carolina Melgrady and the Wildcats, one of those teams that I think are that next tier that could be an intriguing watch the next month or so.
Yeah, there's probably five or six teams in this Big 12 that are probably in the same tier. And there were some crazy finishes so far in conference championships, Burko, but this might have been the craziest. TCU was leading at one point, and they ended up finishing fourth. There were four or five teams, maybe not Kansas State, although they had a really great final round shooting 5-under, but there were four teams that had a chance to win this on the final hole if, you know, putts fell a certain way. And so I think it just shows that, you know, the depth in college golf is there. You have, I mean, really, a team like Houston was in the mix up until late in the day in that final round. And it's different for the Big 12, right? I think for as much as this conference shakeup is confusing, what it's done is it's given us these championships that are arguably going to be tougher than regionals, especially when you look at a Big 10s or an SECs or an ACCs, maybe even a Big 12s. Like, there are more top 20, top 25, top 30 teams in this than we're going to see here in 2 weeks. And so to win one of these things, I think is special, especially to do it in your first year in the conference under a first year head coach. This could be a springboard for Arizona to sneak up on some people. And as we saw at St. Andrews, they could play a little bit of match play as well. And so I'm looking for them to ride this momentum. A little concerned about Arizona State, as you said, with just 5 players on the roster. Their freshmen did not play well. And so they got to go back to the drawing board just a little bit and try to figure things out. And one more thing too, Berko, with this championship, as we go further down the leaderboard, the 500 rule is something that we'll talk about a little bit later on this podcast. But Baylor Bears, you've been high on them at times in the last few years. They entered at 7 wins above 500. Jay Goble's squad finishes 11th on the dot. That's 3 wins, 10 losses, exactly 500. So if my math is correct, they eke by into the NCAA regional round by the slimmest of margins.
Yeah, trending the wrong way. When you look at Baylor, you know, Jay Goble, you consider the job he's done for more than a decade there. Seemingly every third or fourth year, they're that team that you're like, they could make a run. So they'll kind of see where it plays out with regional selections. Texas Tech, the women, they're hosting a regional. They're not going to be playing. And once we get into it next week with the women's selection show, we're going to see a lot of host schools hosting, not playing, or hosting, and they're an 8 seed, a 9 seed, maybe a double-digit seed. Just a little bit of a teaser heading into
Do you think they still host? Do you think Texas Tech still do the greens go all of a sudden and they back out last minute? We've seen it.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a few schools in that similar position. So that's, you know, you feel for programs like that because these things are booked years in advance when they, you know, when they win these draws to host a regional. So to not even have a chance to play at home has to be disappointing. Other conference tournaments, how about Florida Gulf Coast University beating Stetson in a 4-hole playoff in the Atlantic Sun Championship, their first ever NCAA regional berth. You just said a key word, depth. We're starting to see a little bit more beyond the obvious standouts and juggernauts that we talk about on a weekly basis.
Yeah, Shannon Sikora has done a great job with this program. He was a longtime coach at Barry, for those who don't know, and he was hired a few years ago. And for as good of a job that Andrew Dan has done on the men's side down there in Fort Myers, Shannon's done a amazing job. Like he's a great player too, but he's gotten, you know, a player like Louisiane Gauthier, or however you say that. I know it's French, but she ends up winning the individual champion. But he's recruited the players, he's coached them up, and we talk about crazy finishes too. I don't think I've ever seen a 4-hole playoff between two teams. I don't think I've ever seen one go that far, but yet they did. They beat Stetson and they get their first NCAA regional berth. So that was probably one to kind of be at, because you know, that's
excitement,
insane
drama. Yeah.
It's 5-5, right? And so what are the odds that you tie for 3 holes going 5-5 with 5 college players, 5 mid-major lineups going toe-to-toe for until 4 holes? That's crazy.
I mean, that's slim and none. What jumps to mind are the NCAAs in 13 at Crabapple outside of Atlanta, where you had 4 teams playing for 3 spots to move on. And if memory serves, Texas A&M was on the outside looking in after, I believe, also incurring a penalty to get into that. Because I remember I talked to JT Higgins, 12 years
ago.
There
was
and
that was the slow play penalty with John Rahm, right?
Correct. But I believe Rahm didn't get it, but 2 others did. I think UCF was somehow involved. Memories faint on this Good Friday morning, but that's about the only one. But that only lasted a hole. But it was 4 teams on 5 different holes, and we knew what was at stake. So tip of the cap to FGCU there. And a bit of history for Cal State Fullerton and Tarleton State. First big West title for Fullerton since the program was reinstated in 2009. And Tarleton dancing after winning the WAC in their very first year in D1. How about that?
I mean, there's a reason why they're Division I, right? I mean, just
jump
right up to the top level and kind of show people what you're working with. They're ranked something like, they're almost in the top 100 too in the national rankings. So that's just one of those things. I feel like you could put, you know, I don't know too much about Division II women's golf, but you could probably put a team like Daytona State or Nova or one of those. I think Daytona State's actually JUCO, but you could put a Nova or one of these Florida schools in D2 and you could bump them up to D1 and they could be a top 60, top 70 team maybe. You know, it just shows, I think, especially with these roster limits coming down the pipe, when we start to see these players matriculate downward, I think people don't give Division II golf nearly enough credit as they should. So, I mean, hats off to them. I actually saw their basketball team play UCF earlier this season. So,
look at you. You were dialed
State.
In.
Yeah, I'm dialed in. What's their mascot? The Tarleton State.
I knew you were going there, and I refused to go look online.
The Texans, I think. Isn't it the Texans? Yeah, it's the Texans.
Wow.
Like the Houston Texans. Okay. I pulled up that Golf Week article from 2013. It was Tyler Dunlap made a 50-foot birdie putt on the 8th hole, and then that was his 17th hole of the day. And then on the last hole, he had an errant drive, made a 40-foot par putt, and that appeared to keep them one shot clear of the cut line. However, Dunlap and two other players in his group, John Rahm and Greg
someone
Eason,
from UCF.
Greg Eason from UCF, Mr. 92 on the
Down
Corn Ferry
in the Bahamas.
Tour. They were notified they would need to proceed to the clubhouse to discuss possible pace of play violations. So long story short, they got slapped with penalties. Rahm was not penalized, and there you go.
The other two were.
And the
crazy
part is
I can remotely recall.
Oh, that you're sick. You're just sick that you can remember that. But the funny part is that's not even the last slow play penalty drama that we've had at NCAA championship. I mean, we had JC Deacon at Carson Creek in 2018 got a infraction for it. So, certainly, as pace of play is top of mind on tour, we've been dealing with it forever.
Yeah. You talked about the 500 rule a short time ago. Quick update. Tulsa needed to win the American title. It did, their first since 2021. And then here are some teams that you would normally think are good. So as this 500 rule has hit the women's game, teams like Clemson, Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia, they're done. All guaranteed below 500, their season's over. UCLA and Maryland, they've got work to do at Big Tens. And I'm trying to think, did Clemson not make it to match play last year? Or it might have been 2 years ago at Greyhawk.
They made it to match play last year. They were the eighth seed.
Yeah, correct. I mean, here's a program. Now, Savannah Gruel gone, but you talk about a big switch, and it's a whole nother conversation. Is the 500 rule needed in women's golf? You're going to get 10 different answers. I would think those three or four teams might say, no, it's not needed.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty evenly split, too, on the status of program in terms of what answer you get. The big guns don't want it because you want to be able to play in the best tournaments and you don't want to have to worry about that. But on the flip side, you know, other smaller programs will say that it's absolutely necessary. But I would argue this, though, in that this 500 rule, we're probably going to get four, maybe five teams fall victim to it, which in the first year of the men's back in 2007, I think it was, we had four teams. And so kind of right about that average. But UCLA will enter, they're four below right now. I think they make up that difference at Big Tens. Maryland, on the other hand, They're 11 behind. So I think we could probably chalk Maryland into that foursome and make it a fivesome. They're right on the bubble in terms of an at-large berth anyways. They're 59th, I think it is. I had the rankings up right here. Oh, and I clicked on Clemson. That's why I knocked my screen off. But they're 58th in the rankings. The magic number right now I have at 57. That's UC Davis. So Maryland kind of doesn't factor anyways. But the crazy part is that this 500 rule that's knocked out five teams, it's really not bringing in your mid-majors anyways. I mean, it's bringing in an Illinois, a Miami, a BYU, which I guess used to be a mid-major. And then UC Davis, that's a mid-major, but I think they drop out when the rankings update and Washington takes their place. And so the big argument for the 500 rule is usually that it spreads the wealth, right? It gives these other smaller programs a chance to boost their ranking and play in bigger events, show their skills, things like that. This is one of those years on the women's side where, though we do have a lot of parity, and I feel like we do have some mid-majors that could make some noise, I still don't know if that means making noise at La Costa, because the highest-ranked mid-major right now is 33rd in the country, and that's Georgia Southern. Some of that is because the mid-majors, like a BYU, have gone up, and now they're Power Fours, technically, but I still don't know if the 500 rule is something that, you know, truly, truly works. And, you know, I think it would be unfortunate for a program like UCLA to miss out on an NCAA regional ranked 27th in the country simply because they had their two best players decide to pack their bags and leave midseason. So I still don't know that it's super necessary, especially now, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong.
Other quick hitters: Western Kentucky, first Conference USA title and regional berth. Radford in the Big South winning the conference for the first time in match play. They're dancing for the first time. Sacramento State, 5 out of 6 years winning the Big Sky. Furman continues their stranglehold on the Southern Conference. Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, second Southland Conference title, first since 09. Alabama State dancing for the first time in nearly a decade, winning the SWAC. Morehead State, their second, what is that, Ohio Valley Conference, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's their second title in the last 3 years. Illinois State, Missouri Valley Conference, their second straight. They win by 31 shots. How about FDU, Fairleigh Dickinson, the pride of the Garden State? They win the Northeast Conference title, then College of Charleston, third title in the last 4 years in the Colonial Athletic Association. Again, we mentioned we're hitting air here on Friday morning. So in about 90 minutes in the SEC for the ladies, you've got South Carolina, the number one seed, going up against the Florida Gators, the 7th seed after the stroke play portion where the top 8 move on to match play. Heck of a run for Florida to sort of get to this point. You know, you look at the rosters, the names maybe not as familiar that we've seen in years past. They're pretty good this year. They've, if you sort of peel back some layers, they're a good team that's won on multiple occasions this year. So to get here maybe isn't the biggest surprise. This is the South Carolina team I'm intrigued about now. Hannah Darling's a senior. The gig's up. Luis Ridquist, a senior. She's finishing up. If the back is healthy, we know what she can do. And Ella Galitsky, the sensational freshman. That's a really strong 1-2-3 punch for South Carolina. You know, Lamore and Burnett have been really solid, sort of playing the you know, that back end of the lineup good for head coach Kaylin Anderson. I think it's a good one. I think South Carolina, every year I'm waiting for them. This is the time of the season, to be quite honest, they don't get the job done. Mm-mm. And Kaylin Anderson would be the first to say it. You know, you go back to Greyhawk a few years ago, where they're the number one team in the country. They barely get through regionals. And after the first round NCAAs, they were last. You know, is this the year they finally validate how good they are? We'll find out. But a win here at the SECs could be that springboard.
Yeah, and it would be a shame for a Hannah Darling or a Luis Ridquist to finish their college career and only have one NCAA match play and zero SEC titles to their credit. Like, that would be, you know, not a true, you know, a true resume for just what they've meant to this team, what they've meant to college golf. And it's hard to believe still, and I think we talk about this every year, that South Carolina hasn't won an SEC title since 2002. For as great as they've been in the regular season, they've not got it done at conference. But I really think this could be the year that they go from soft to tough. And a big reason is Ella Golitzky. She's only a freshman. She's only, gosh, is she still 18 years old, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, and she started in January. She's a three-month freshman.
But she is so seasoned in terms of international competition. And I mean, she's tough. Like, she's tough as nails. And I remember a moment at ANWA a couple of weeks ago. Hannah Darling didn't play well. She had a tough second round, ended up missing the cut. But for all that she's been through in the last year, losing her game, getting subbed out at NCAAs last year, not playing stroke play because, you know, she didn't want to put a scorecard in her hand and turn in a score, she's come out of that. She's had a great year. And I thought that her attitude after she walked out of scoring and walked up to Kaylin and Ella Golitzky, who were both standing there, and her attitude was so positive. And she's basically like, I'm fine. I still feel good about my game. I know what I need to do. I'm going to be ready here in a couple weeks. And I mean, that could be kind of the moment that you look back a few weeks from now and be like, look, that's the reason. That positive attitude is why they are now tough enough to kind of get the job done. So I fully expect them to beat Florida. I'm not super in on Florida yet. They're a super young team. I think they have one senior on their roster, a lot of sophomores. They've won four times, but the strength of schedule is not, it's not as good.
Yeah, it's not up there.
As these other teams. I mean, they've won four times. They haven't finished worse than fourth, I think, and they're still ranked like 25th or 26th in the country. So that's not, you know, it's hard to win, but it's still, they're just not at the same level as South Carolina. It's frankly not even close. So their biggest thing is they got to get the monkey off their back now and try to get to the NCAA championship because, I mean, we're going on 7 years now. 2019 was the last time that they have made nationals. And that, you know, that seat's been pretty hot too. I mean, Florida, when you look at what the men's team's done, look at what the other sports have done. Basketball just wins a national championship. You have to win national titles at the University of Florida, and you can't win national titles if you don't get there, and they just haven't gotten there. So these are probably two programs that have the most to prove in this conference, I would think, just in slightly different ways.
ACC stroke play portion done. Stanford wins convincingly in that part. They haven't won the championship. Andrea Revuelta, their freshman, holding off Lottie Wode and Mirabelle Ting that were in the mix, and Amanda Sambach from Virginia, who made a late charge. So six teams go to match play. So Stanford and Florida State get byes. Quite honestly, I would be shocked if those two don't end up together, although Wake Forest or Virginia could make a run. That, you know, the thing that stands out for Stanford when I was looking at the scores, there was a round where Megha Ghane made like a 9 or 10, and she was not a counter. But then she bounces back. And then there was another round, Maya Orton-Gren. She struggled, didn't get the job done, but then she shoots 5 under 67 the next day. They're good. They're really good. They've got depth. Not a ton of it, but as somebody said, they're 2 through 5. They're number ones virtually anywhere else in the country. 90% of the schools in the country. We don't want to get there yet. They've got to win the ACCs in the match play. They've got to get through regionals, but we're looking at a potential undefeated season. And some might say the note is event, the match play round robin.
That doesn't count. Come on. Let's not let Noda No to throw a wrench. Could you imagine a Stanford alum throwing a wrench and putting an asterisk on an undefeated season? Could you imagine
that? Yeah, let's let it get there. But they're really good. And it's, you know, this is a good opportunity in match play to truly say, hey, how does Lottie go up against so-and-so, or Mirabelle go up against another Cardinal? It could be a preview of maybe something early at the NCAAs if it falls into place. So it'll be intriguing to see how that finishes up over the next couple of days. And then you throw out the Big Tens. Is it Oregon or is it something else? You know, Oregon front and center, obviously new teams in the Big Ten now. Could USC compete? And then I was thinking about the old guard. You know, the Big Ten teams that are actually the Big Ten for decades. And I'm gonna throw the Buckeyes at you.
Yeah.
If you're looking for someone off the newbies, if you will, what Corey Hollenbaugh has done this year has been impressive. Lisa Strom, the head coach at Ohio State, keep an eye on them. Because where are they playing? Baltimore Country Club?
Yeah,
does that sound right?
Bully Rock.
So other than the Terrapins, there's no home course advantage. So let's see if Oregon can go across country and play well. They have struggled doing that in years past in other tournaments.
Yeah, last at the Darius Rucker a year ago, finished 17th out of 17th. They were close to that the year before, and it was funny. I think Derek Radley, when someone asked him if they were going back to Darius this year, he was like, absolutely not. But yeah, they've struggled at the Windy City, which isn't really East Coast. I mean, it's Chicago, but a little bit unfamiliar and quite a hike, at least from Eugene. And then didn't play well at the East Lake Cup. So they have a lot to prove in terms of can their games travel east. But then at the same time, yeah, they might not win the Big Tens, but the national championship is played on the West Coast in San Diego at La Costa. They did pretty well there last year, so this is simply just a tune up, and it's probably not indicative, you know, how these teams or any other teams fare this week is not indicative of what we're going to see out of them in the postseason. But, you know, it's good practice too, because Oregon could get sent right now. I have them in my bracketology because we know the six number one seeds, they will get sent out in order of priority. So Stanford will get probably the Gold Canyon, Arizona region. Arkansas, I think, will remain at number two, especially after a strong stroke play performance at SECs. They'll go to Norman, Oklahoma. Florida State, then, that sends them to Lexington, Kentucky. South Carolina to Charlottesville in Virginia. And then Oregon, there's really only two courses or two sites left for them to get sent. It's either to Lubbock, Texas, or to the Scarlet, well, yeah, or to the Scarlet course at Ohio State. So they're going to have to travel no matter where they end up in this ranking. And so this is just good practice for that.
Let's pivot to the men. I was at Positiempo for the Western Intercollegiate. Arizona's Philip Yakubchik became just the fourth player to go back-to-back in the 78th playing of that tournament. He seemingly has found a golf course he loves, won by six shots. Now six straight rounds or par or better at Positiempo. The restoration of the greens complete. That golf course went to a whole nother level. It was a great week out there. Old Miss, they're back to number one after a 33-shot win at Old Waverly. So they're front and center again, Chris Malloy's team. We'll see how good we are. They are, because, as you know, you want to sort of quick hitters on who wins the, you know, the SECs, the Big Tens. I mean, you know, it's on tap, you know, starting next week. SECs, I don't want to overthink it. You know, I'm just going to say Auburn. Mm-hmm. They're good. They haven't nearly won like they did last year. I think Auburn's going to be a tough out the rest of the way home.
And then Big 12s. Who do you got? Big 12s. So run through yours, and then I'll run through mine.
Big 12. I'm going to say Oklahoma State. Yep. I think they're back, if you will. ACCs, I'm going to go Florida State. Again, I'm going. I don't want to overthink it. And Big Ten.
This is that the toughest one.
Yeah, that one's tough for my quick hitters. I'm watching the first two balls go by in the batter's box. I don't know. I'm going to come back to that one. So give me your three, okay, and then we'll try to figure it out.
So the SECs, I'll go with Texas. They've just been really hot, and they haven't had, you know, all five guys fire at the same time, but I think this team is building. They're starting to mature just a little bit, with a few minor setbacks this spring. So I like them, especially over Ole Miss. I just, you know, while you're looking for your Big Ten, I just want to kind of go back to that 33-point win. They beat Alabama, who's a solid team, but there was only two top 50 teams in that field, and they got the most average points for any win all season. I mean, this can't happen. Like, this is not, like, they move up from 3-1 in the country. They'll get first dibs now on a regional. I think it's fairly unfair. Like, it's just so unfair that they got so many points, whereas you look at some of these other, like Texas, some of the events they've won, like the Valspar, things like that, they didn't get anywhere close to that. And so this could be exactly what Ole Miss didn't need, is maybe this false sense of confidence being number one, and then having every other team, whether it's deserved or not, put a huge target on their back saying, these guys don't deserve to be there. They're a great team, but they're not the number one team in the country. So I think Ole Miss might actually struggle with this title. Big 12s, I think Arizona State, for some reason, Preston Summerhays hasn't had the type of season that we expected him to have as a senior. Bias Stare, I think there's going to be a little bit of negative effect from what happened at the Masters with everything that kind of went on. You know, he was trying to be a kid, but I think stuff like that can kind of stick with you and maybe tear at your confidence a little bit. So, you know, I look for him to try to bounce back from that, but I don't know. I feel like for some reason, Arizona State's going to go to Southern Hills and get the job done. And then ACCs, I'm with you on Florida State. It's kind of the same thing that they went through last year, right? Start slow, finish strong, finish where you need to be. Luke Clanton is an absolute monster, so he's going to put them on his back and carry them. And then in the Big Tens, I mean, you say don't overthink it. You know, why not?
Yeah,
why
then not you got to say, yeah, then why you got to say Illinois. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something I was missing. And, you know, what have they won? 18 of the last 20. You know, so, I mean, pretty much they've had a hold on that for the better part of the last couple of decades.
Yeah, watch out for UCLA, though. They're in the Big Ten, right? UCLA?
Yeah, I know, exactly. I still can't wrap my head around who's where, who's going. So I like that. If you're looking for maybe a newbie, someone off the beaten path, Armin Kirikosian in the last couple of years. And when you've got Omar Morales, Pablo Arreño, it's a pretty good 1-2 punch to tap into. It's going to be a lot of fun breaking those down and keeping an eye on them over the next couple of weeks. And as we wrap it up, and I think you referenced it a couple of weeks ago, and you wrote an article, Jim Nance referenced it on Augusta when Corey Connors was playing well. Herb Page, the longtime, recently retired coach at Kent State. People are coming out of the woodworks, and understandably so, sending good wishes. What's the latest with Herb?
Yeah, so he was diagnosed late last year with pancreatic cancer. It was actually, fortunately, barely stage one, so he was able to have a surgery, which is called the Whipple, and he had that done last December. Had a couple of complications from that, ended up being on a feeding tube for some 30 days into the new year. And, you know, kind of long story short, he's actually, the prognosis is good. He's doing preventative chemo now. He says, fingers crossed, the doctors think that they have all of it. They removed half of his pancreas, his gallbladder, cleaned out, I guess they call it a duct. And, you know, as far as pancreatic cancer goes, we know that's one of the worst ones. You know, and he said, you know, quote, it's it should be a death sentence. And but I think if there's anyone who's tough enough to beat it and get through it, it's Herb Page. I mean, you think about a guy who played three sports at Kent State, was teammates with Nick Saban on the football team, who's the kicker, and you know, built this golf program. I think when he launched the program in the late 70s, they had no golf balls and like two scholarships, something like that. And to be able to bring guys through like Corey Connors and Mac Hughes and Taylor Pendrith and Chase Johnson and Ian Holt. And I mean, just Kent State had no business being good in golf. And you see the last
Ben Curtis, John Mills.
The only major championship, but they had no business, you know, being a good team up in Kent, Ohio. And I mean, you're seeing the lasting effects of what Herb Page did, because the women's team's going to go to an NCAA regional. They're going to win the MAC again. The men's team is, you know, they've been kind of up and down, but seemingly trending. But I think the most important thing is, you know, for Herb to get healthy. I think this was his first Masters that he's missed in a long time. Was getting chemo last week, and but again, he's as tough as they come, and his goal is to be at La Costa next year to watch his women's team play in the NCAA championship. So I told Herb I think that's a great goal. I know he'd love to go to Port Rush too this year. He used to go to all the Opens back when Ben Curtis was, you know, obviously he was in all the Opens for winning one. So he used to go with his wife Paula and go to all those. He'd love to make it there, but he said, you know, that's probably a little bit too aggressive. But, you know, we're thinking about you, Herbie. We're praying for you. And I just know that, you know, we're going to be hanging out in Carlsbad next summer.
Love it. All good thoughts and wishes continue for Herb Page. Can't wait to see him again. Can't wait to get this postseason rolling. Conferences are underway. We've got selection shows the next couple of weeks. This is the greatest stretch. We talk about it from September. It's all about the last 6 weeks of the season, and we are here front and center, and we'll have you covered as we always do right here on College Golf Talk. Appreciate everyone for tuning in. As always, for Brentley, I'm Burko. We will see you next time.